We know you have a lot of sucky broadcasts to choose from. So thank you for listening to this sucky broadcast. And now, here's Bradley Laborman.
What is up? Hi, everybody. Welcome to this edition of this sucky broadcast. We've been going pretty strong for with the new format, with the new name for a couple weeks now. And I'm very happy with all the results and everything that have been going on with that. So here we are, new episode. And this one is a doozy of an episode. I'm sorry. I apologize to any of you that were not able to watch this live, that had to watch this on replay. But you missed out on a good live episode. I'm already predicting that right now. So let me get right into it with you right now. And just wanted to introduce tonight's guest. Tonight's guest is Mark Christopher Lawrence, producer, actor, comedian, MC, inspirational speaker, auctioneer, everything, okay? He has been nominated for 2 Emmy Awards for his work on the short film The Flourish and on his co-produced short Stacks. Mark is a recipient of the San Diego Critics Circle's Craig's Noel Award for Outstanding Actor of the Year. He's an international headliner that has worked with the likes of Sinbad, Jerry Seinfeld, Rodney Dangerfield, and Jeff Foxworthy, as well as having headlined clubs and colleges all over the U.S. and Canada. This year, Mark has garnered lead roles in upcoming productions releasing soon. 2 films for the holiday season, Bringing Back Christmas and Lying Together, as well as a lead role in the PureFlix.com miniseries Fragment Oblivion, and has also recently released a film on PureFlix called Nothing is Impossible. Mark Christopher Lawrence is best known for his series regular role as Big Mike on the NBC TV series Chuck, and he can be seen on Tyler Perry's TV drama All the Queen's Men, streaming now on BET+. Also, he can be seen as the guest star on the new series Sprung on Freevee TV. Mark Christopher Lawrence is in pre-production on several projects as a writer and or producer. Don't miss Dry Bar comedy special, Mark Christopher Lawrence, Clean Out of Compton. Welcome to the show, Mark Christopher Lawrence. When I say your name, I don't know if I just be like, hey, Mark, is just Mark fine? Or do I have to go Mark Christopher Lawrence?
It doesn't matter. Mark, okay. Christopher, MCL. My mother calls me Chris.
Okay. Mark Christopher. All right. I like that. I mean, so welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could come on and be a sucky guest. That's always good to have a new sucky guest on. And I just want to start out by saying I'm a fanboy with you because I read it in your bio, but also just to be clear, that's where I know you from is the show Chuck, because I used to watch Chuck. And I wanted to say, I actually called my mom because the show Chuck brought my mother and I together. Like I lived 30, 40 miles away at that time. Mm-hmm. And I would drive home. I would drive back to see her and we would watch Heroes and then Chuck and then Heroes Fall Apart and then Chuck stayed on. So, but it was a very important show to me. So there you go. Thank you.
I had a week during the first season of Chuck where I worked on during the day on Chuck and the evenings on Heroes.
Okay.
So I was sleeping about 3 hours. If that.
What were you doing on Heroes?
On Heroes, I played a manager of a fast food restaurant, and they had added a young lady. I can't remember her last name. Her name was Dana. She would watch like a TV show, and then she could do whatever the person does in the show. And somebody tried to rob the store, and she knocked the guy out.
Right. Was that okay? Wait, was that her? Was she the one that later on, like hooked up with Hero, or was that her? Or was that a different person?
I don't remember. I watched that show the first couple of seasons. Then it got weird on me.
Right, right, right. Well, that was because much like now, there was that writer's strike that happened during that time, and Heroes season one was a lot different than Heroes season two.
Because that writer's strike kind of hurt Chuck because we were winning our time slot except for Dancing with the Stars and Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. And when the strike was over, they didn't put us right back on. NBC put Heroes in our time slot for 22 episodes, and we lost a bunch of audience.
Right, because they moved you to later, right? Is that what?
No, they didn't play us at all until those 22 episodes were over. And then they put us back on, and we had lost, a share of the market to Big Bang Theory.
Oh, right, right, right.
Because we were beating them before that.
That's so weird that Big Bang Theory started around that time, too. It's so weird, these shows and how everything. But it's just really just great to have you on. I know you're a comedian. I know at some point I want to work with you in the future as a comedian. And it's just really, I like you because you are, as you stated, you're a pretty clean comic.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that. So how does that work in current day?
Yeah, it works fine. I just do what I do. And, if someone in front of me is dropping a bunch of F-bombs, then, I figure out a way to overcome it.
Right. Right. But you worked with Sinbad, and Sinbad tends to be clean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sinbad's, I like him. He's a safe comic. Jerry Seinfeld doesn't seem like he's that.
No.
Over the top or anything like that. So.
Yeah, I guess it's also good. Years ago in L.A., actually in Orange County at a club called The Laugh Stop. And this was before Seinfeld. And then he got Seinfeld. He produced and, blew up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's just fascinating to just see. I was listening to the radio yesterday, and this radio show was doing this thing where they took comedians and they played their first appearance on the Johnny Carson show, and to see how much they had changed it, like to the comedians that we know now, like Eddie Murphy and Jerry Seinfeld was another one, and they had Jay Leno on there. And it is a very interesting take on that. So right now with the you were supposed to be here, right? You were supposed to be in Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Yeah, I was supposed to be working on a film starting in June. And so that didn't happen because the writer's strike happened.
And, you're a writer yourself, right?
Yeah.
Have you participated at all in the strike?
No, I'm in San Diego. It's in LA, really. There's really nothing in being produced here in San Diego. So there's no opportunities. And then I've been busy trying to find other work as a comic, to stave off the onslaught of bills that continue to show up.
right. What have you done comedy in pretty much every state? Have you done it everywhere?
No, I haven't. Mostly West Coast. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I said to him, I said, really people haven't seen my act, although I'm bored with it. I tend to drop bits out of it and write a new bit for it because I get bored with it. And then, but I could probably work anywhere because really nobody in the rest of the country has seen me except for Dry Bar.
But on that, so do you think, is that how people recognize you more, is like with Chuck and things like that?
I get recognized equally from Chuck and Fear of a Black Hat.
What was that?
It was a rap Spinal Tap.
Rap Spinal Tap. Have I never heard of that? What was it called? Fear
of a Black Hat.
Okay.
It's we shot it right after the LA riots.
Okay.
And it's the only thing I've ever done that I just watch and laugh, and I don't pick myself apart. And even though it's like when I look at it, I go, I wasn't a good actor then. but it's very funny, although very irreverent. It's not it's not family friendly.
Oh, okay. So I got you there. That's funny because like I always look like the earliest thing I ever did movie wise was this movie I did in college. And it was a dumb superhero movie that I shot in college because when I was in college, my professor was like, "Hey, we got these this new computer editing software, and you can use it if you want to." And I said, "Oh, cool! Can I make a movie with it?" He said, "Sure, I guess." So I made this movie, and then I was really happy with it. It was fun, and everybody that was involved with it had a good time with it. But I used a bunch of copyrighted music back in the day, so I couldn't do anything with it.
Didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. So then I rebooted it. Because when I was working on stuff and I was moving all over the place and I can tell this story while you go get the door. It's fine. Because you got it. Somebody's gonna get the door for you.
Yeah.
Mark Christopher was expecting something, so I just wanted to make sure that he got it, that he's able to get it. So. So I rebooted it because I moved to Chicago and I was like, you know, I want to do something fun. I want to try to make a movie. And so I redid it, and I'm still in the same situation where I had copyrighted music, and I got to take care of that again. So,
well, at least now it's easier to edit out the music and put something else in its place.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the old
yeah.
days, you know, with film, it was so much harder.
Right. So much, and just so much technology just changes and things like that. Like, I have a program now that I can use that after I shoot this podcast, I can put it into this little AI program, and it edits it. It puts it together so it's like looks clean on like Instagram.
Oh, wow.
It's a pretty nice. It's and like somebody reached out and said, "Hey, we're beta testing this. Do you want to try it out?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I want to try it out, whatever." And I saw somebody the other day, and I love editing. So I never have a problem editing at all. But I watched somebody the other day do the same thing where they shot a 2-camera podcast, and then they have this AI program that goes into Adobe Premiere that just whoop, edits it. And it's done. And I don't want to give up editing. I like editing. So,
no, there you go.
So when you, this is something that one of my favorite stories about the show Chuck is that the show Chuck was almost canceled. And then Subway kind of swooped in and saved the show. And part of the deal with that was every time we saw Big Mike, he had a Subway sandwich in his hands. And
well,
did you get tired of Subway sandwiches?
Not really. I think what happened was like the fans started writing. They would go to Subway on the night of the show, Monday nights, mm-hmm. and buy a foot long and put a note in the comment box and say, "Save Chuck."
Okay.
And,
I didn't know that. Okay.
So that's why Subway stepped in because that was like this nationwide phenomenon. And then, so then they approached the producers and somehow worked out a deal to be a sponsor of the show and write in. But I wasn't the only one that ate sandwiches. It just, when it got to me, then I ended up being the guy.
Uh-huh. Right.
And you know, one thing about it was that, I like Subway.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a task. It just I just thought that my story stopped growing when Subway came in.
Oh, really? I loved your character. I loved and you know, and this is part of it too, was I worked at Best Buy for several years.
Yeah.
Like I had a hiatus in my life and I was doing a public access show, but I needed some money. So I was working at Best Buy while I was hosting this like weekly public access show. And they stuck me in digital imaging because they were like, "Oh, he knows how to run cameras or whatever." And that's where they put
right.
me. But that's what I liked the most about the whole show was all of you, all of the characters were so relatable because it was very much, I always told my mom, I'm like, somebody on this show clearly worked at Best Buy. One of the writers clearly, because they were nailing stuff that was going on behind
Chris Spiedek.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was right on. There was a lot of stuff that was going on, even just dumb like fight things and stuff like that that would go on right. And stuff like that. And right. I was just like, this is all like really legitimate stuff. So, but I mean, your character was like, that was one of the things where the Big Mike character was just this, like the was a typical manager for me for like the like how the Best Buy was and just like. You were, to me, you were like, because it wasn't really, you weren't, it was like, you were like this like manager, but you were also like the police sergeant type, role, like that role.
I liked the Big Mike character seasons 1 through 3. And okay. Then in season 3, he ended up going to the El Segundo School of business management, and he softened. And the reason I liked him better those first few seasons was because he was polar opposite of me. He was kind of, you know, butthead.
You okay. know?
And I like being able to play that character in that way. You know, because people always see me as you know, just being funny and, you know, without an edge, and it's in there. And I think I'm a better dramatic actor than I am a comedic actor because I work harder at being a dramatic actor.
Have you done stage? Have you done theater?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's what the Craig Knoll Award is. I did two plays in San Diego that year, A Raisin in the Sun and Top Dog Underdog. And so I was nominated for Best Actor for both of those plays. And they gave me Outstanding Actor of the Year.
Oh wow! What other plays? What other characters? Oh,
many plays. My first professional play was Antony and Cleopatra at Los Angeles Theater Center. Right. You know, I've done some of the August Wilson plays, Fences, Piano Lesson. Played the lead in Piano Lesson. Played Gabriel in Fences. Just many plays. Basilio in Life is a Dream. So I do classical as well. So, you know.
And do you sing musicals? Do you do it?
The last musical I did was Cotton Patch Gospel down here in San Diego. But before that, I hadn't even auditioned for a musical in 18 years. You know, I did musicals in college. And then I, when Rent came out, I went to audition for the touring company of it. And I was in the hallway waiting my turn. And I hear these two guys right before me just blow the roof off the place. And I went, what am I doing here? And I didn't audition for you know, a musical in 18 years. And I actually did a couple of plays that had music in them. And so before I auditioned for Cotton Patch Gospel, I studied with a music coach. And she said to me that, she says, and I told her that story. And she says, well, here's the thing. She says, when I'm watching you sing, she says, you really sell the story as an actor. She said, and if I was in an audition, I would hire you over the guy who is technically sound because I don't have to teach him acting. She says, yep. And I can fix whatever flaws you have technically.
I ran a children's theater for about 8 years, 6-8 years. And I would always, when we would do musical or anything like that, I would always say it's easier to teach an actor to sing than a singer to act. that was always me. That was the thing, was when I was in college, I hadn't really ever pursued any sort of singing at all. Mm-hmm. I went through high school thinking I didn't know how, like being told I didn't know how to sing because that was one of these schools where if you didn't have the right last name, then you didn't get a part and stuff like that. and so when I went to college my freshman year, I was getting like lead roles and stuff. I was like, what am I doing that's different? And so then my director says,
right,
we haven't done a musical in 20 years. We're going to do a musical. And so they decide they're going to do Into the Woods. And I'd seen the Bette Midler version, not the Bette, Bernadette Peters version. numerous times on PBS, and I watched it. And so I was like, I don't know how to sing. And there's this little tiny boy in the choir in college who knows how to sing really good. And he wants to be Jack. And I'm like, I'm big and goofy. And that's what Jack needs to be, is big and goofy, not like little mousy Jack.
Right.
So I took the soundtrack and sang with it every day. And I went in and did the audition and got the part. And then the orchestra guy was like, okay, let's work on music. And I'm like, I don't know how to read music. I go, as long as you play the songs and they sound like the songs from the soundtrack, I could do them. So just do them that way. So that was it. That was my thing. And same thing happened when I had been doing children's theater for so long, and somebody said, community theater decided they were going to do Spamalot. And I said, I'm going to audition for Spamalot because I want to show people that I know what I'm doing. And I'm not just teaching their kids out of nowhere. So I went in to do Spamalot, and fortunately my high school coach was the high school director who liked me, was the director for this community theater production. And I didn't get cast as one of the lead guys, and I was really upset. And he said, I didn't cast you as one of the leads because we're going to have the leads just play the leads instead of playing every single part. And he goes, I trust you and this girl that was in this show to play all the other parts. And I was like, cool. And so I got to be Undead Fred and all the other stuff. It was awesome. Good times.
Oh, awesome. Love well, that was like Cotton Patch, it was originally a one-man show, and they cut it up to make it a three-person show with a band. And I think I played 15 characters in that.
That's the stuff. I like that. That's what I want. I want to be like, I want people to be like, wow, this guy just played 10 to 15 different people. I like doing that. I like the theater in the round, magic theater stuff that we used to do in college, stuff like that, where you're just playing different roles and popping in different places. I love
that. One of the things that I'm working on as a writer with a friend of mine, Chris Clobber, we're working on a one-man show, and it's 10 characters. And so we're fleshing out those characters, and I think we have two more to finish, and then it's time to start putting them on stage and seeing how they work, and then maybe do like a collaboration with a theater. And I think my ultimate goal is to get it to Broadway.
I'm currently writing a pilot for a show, and I want to talk to you about it. But I don't want to talk about it on my podcast because I think it's such a great idea. I don't want to give it away to anybody.
Don't give it away.
So, don't give it away. Nope, not going to happen. But I need to talk to you about that. I've been thinking about that.
Yeah, let's
collab. That sounds like fun. The other thing that for me, I'm just really starstruck by you because like I said, I liked the show Chuck, and I don't know how long ago we've been like social media friends. It seems like it's been a while. I reached out to you. I saw you in a live, I think, and I popped in and I go, this is fascinating. This is great. So, but you, right now, are you planning on doing? Sorry, I'm all over the place in my brain right now. that's my typical show. Right now, do you have any big plans to take this time where you're not necessarily? I mean, you've still got projects you can work on. That's what I'm saying. You've still got projects coming up that you can be working on. The writer's strike hasn't like shut down everything.
Pretty close. There's only one project that I'm going to do that's not affected, and it's because they already have their rewrites, they already have their shooting script.
Okay.
And so I'm going to do a couple of days on a small film here in San Diego, but other than that, everything that was in the pipeline is down. So now it's about, trying to get into clubs, get into churches, doing comedy, and fill some of these spaces.
I'm just saying, if you're planning on coming this way anyways, you could have still came this way and could have did some comedy. We could have booked up some comedy. So offer's still there. Offer's still on the table. Is there anybody? Is there anybody that you wish that you haven't ever worked with that you would love to work with?
Oh man. James Earl Jones, for sure.
Okay.
De Niro, Pacino, Jessica Lange. There's so many people that you know, Gary Oldman. So many people that I really watch and really enjoy their work. Especially like Gary Oldman, it's like every time I see him, he's different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the kind of actor I am when it comes to acting. I'm definitely a character actor, and I always bring something a little different to it. You know, and I believe that you know, when you're a character actor, your main character is yourself, and then your polar opposite is your second character, and then whatever the script dictates, you know, kind of helps you find what the other characters are. And but when I watch Gary, he's always different, and it just, I mean, even his look changes drastically sometimes, and you know, he's just amazing. I'd love to work with him. So there's lots of people. I mean, I'd like to do more with Tyler Perry. You know, the thing that I did there, I did 4 episodes of All the Queen's Men, and I think they only played 3, which is good because there's an opportunity to go back, possibly.
Now, with the Queen's Men, is that shot in, like, Tyler Perry has like a studio, right?
Yeah, China, and like studio.
Is that in Georgia or is that in
Georgia? Yeah.
Okay. So that, and yeah, that's so where you are.
It's an old army base. In fact, when we shot, it was I think I got hired 2 days before Thanksgiving in 2020.
Okay.
And then was there the month of December and got home like a couple of days before Christmas, and so they, you know, Tyler, you know, had his bubble intact. It's like he sent somebody to my sister's house 2 days before Christmas to test me. And then 3 days before they flew me, sent somebody to my house and tested me again. Mm-hmm. And then flew me private. And then you go directly to the studio, you test again, you go to the house that they have you in, and you share that house with one other actor. And you stay in your rooms for 4 hours. If you need to go to the kitchen or whatever, you got to call the other one and say, "Hey, I'm going to the kitchen," right? So that you don't pass each other in the hallways. And you have PPE stuff to clean, stuff that you touch.
Yeah.
And then after the 4 hours, when all the tests come back in, then they open up camp and you test. I think we were testing every 4 days, temperature every day. And it was really, I felt safe. And, you know, because it was really the high time of, you know, we were right in the thick of the quarantine period.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really a safe environment to work in. And I just thought, I was so proud of Tyler, you know, what he's done with the studio. You know, I've worked at every studio, I think, and every major studio. And when I got there, it was like just to see this thing that he had put together, and it's growing every day. It's getting better every day. And it was the only studio that I'd ever been to that had housing, you know, on campus.
And was that something that came because of the quarantine, or was that already
the housing?
There? Yeah.
No, it was already there because he got an army. It's an army base.
Okay. Right.
So
right.
The house that I stayed in was this big, beautiful, you know, duplex that was 2 doors over from the house that Colin Powell used to live in.
Wow.
when he was the general, I guess, of that base.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Wow. I see that a lot. Like, I remember I was in a taping of Let's Make a Deal, and they had refurbished part of the airport in Burbank had been refurbished into studios. These airport hangars had been like airplane hangars have been converted over into like studios and whatever. So
right.
I thought that was cool. Now, speaking of Georgia, DFW, Dallas Fort Worth, we're planning on putting together, there's supposed to be a big filming complex that's going in here.
Oh wow.
That's supposed to rival Georgia. We're trying to pull people away from Georgia to here. So.
Wow.
I'm letting you know, that's what I'm here for. I mean, I'm kidding. I already moved here. And then like 2 days after I moved here, I saw on TV, they're like, oh, they're putting in a, they're going to build this thing in Fort Worth, this giant studio with like state-of-the-art everything and like a lot of the stuff. And I was just like, that's why I moved here. It was because of that reason. No, I didn't. I just moved here because it was something different. But
well, Tyler has what, 12? He has 12 sound stages. And then he has, there's a White House that's 80% scale.
Okay.
And then there's a house that has four different entrances. So if you're shooting and you need two or three different houses or four houses, you can shoot at this same house and just go to the other side of it to show the front door.
I love that. I love that so much. I just love that stuff. In LA, when I would do YouTube, they would be like, they'd call us up and they'd be like, hey, we have an airplane set and we're just going to keep it up for a month if anybody wants to do airplane sets. And then all these YouTubers are all putting out airplane sketches at the same time. And I see that a lot more now too with TikTok or whatever. I see these kids like all of a sudden TikTok has like 30 or Instagram Reels has like 30 or 40 kids doing videos and they're all about they're all about being at an airport or whatever. And I'm like, oh, these guys just all got together and found a set. But
I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to what like people connect to and make go viral. It's like.
Right. No, I agree with you. The other day I was on TikTok because I left TikTok and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to TikTok because if China already has my information or whoever supposedly stole my information, they can have it. They already have it by now anyways, all your stuff. And I was just, so I started doing TikTok and I posted something and it blew up and I have no idea because stuff that I actually make that I actually put effort into doesn't really do anything. But then stuff that I randomly throw out there, boom, right. People love it. And then I got a message and they're like, hey, you're trending right now. You should go live. And I'm like, what? I've never been trending on TikTok. That's great. So then I went live for a little bit and I'm like, all right, can you guys verify me now? And they won't do that. But
yeah, that's like one of my dry bar clips. That when they released my video, they released, you know, these five clips one at a time. And the one that has the most views has 19.1 million views. And it wasn't really even a joke. It was just something, I was just telling a story about something that happened in real life. And now it's a much better joke than it was then.
But have you noticed that though, that a lot of stand-up seems to do good on Reels and on TikTok? I think I don't know what it is, but I see a lot of people who do stand up, and I've been trying to get out. I've been trying to like go do sets and then just have somebody record it so I can then turn that set into a reel. I'm not doing the set to go to the comedy club and do the set. I'm probably going to the comedy club so I can record an audience watching me do the set so I can put it on Instagram. That's my whole thing, because I see all these comedy things on Instagram, and that's, I think I just realized, and maybe this is me, but like when I got my car, it had Sirius XM in it, and I turned it to the Comedy Central channel, and you would just listen to stand up all day,
right?
And I was just like, I can deal with this. I like stand up. It's hard though, because then in my brain I'm like, when I come up with a joke, I'm like, did I come up with this?
Did I hear it? Right.
Subconsciously while I was driving. And then
I write close to myself. So nobody can say, hey, you're biting my joke. It's like, cause no, I'm not. So this happened to me. And this is why I'm telling the story.
Yeah. You've got to be, most of the stuff I tell is just from experience and just things that I think are funny. And my whole philosophy is always going to be just do what you think is funny. And if somebody laughs with you, then that means that they get you, and those are the people you want to follow you.
Right.
Because those are the people that get in.
Right. I, you know, there's like all of these comics that buy followers, but that doesn't actually put butts in the seats for you. And so, every day somebody's in my inbox trying to sell me followers. I'm going, no, that's okay. I'll just build it organically. People will start following me, and you know, because I need those people to show up.
I had that happen on Twitter when I was early on Twitter. I was popular on Periscope, and somebody was like, "Hey, check your followers. The numbers went up." I'm like, "Oh, cool! I'm getting followers." And it turned out this kid had bought me followers, as like a favor. And I had to go through and like delete. I had to go through and try to use a program to delete everybody, because I'm like, that's thrown off my entire engagement thing, and it just turned me into some weird shadow ban Twitter account now, which I can't even hardly use. But I mean, it's the thing is, I've just been doing it long enough that I feel like half my followers are dead. I've been doing Twitter since 2006 or seven or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that most of these followers have moved on to other accounts. There was a time when Ashton Kutcher was trying to hit 1 million followers. This was when he was still married to Demi Moore. And Demi Moore was like, just make another account. Keep following him. Just make multiple accounts. So she was the one like that first got people to start making fake Twitter accounts just to follow
people. Oh, wow. So it's funny. It's like for a while she was very busy on Twitter, and then she just kind of disappeared.
She did. She actually promoted something I tweeted out in my early days, and it really like gave me a boost and helped me out. And I was thinking about her the other day, and I was like, oh yeah, she's not on here anymore. She really isn't.
Yeah,
she really wasn't on there. Yeah. That was another one. It was all these people that I've met and engaged with, because a lot of people I met on social media. And then I was doing a live show on Paris on Ustream at the time. And I'd have these people come on. Greg Grunberg was somebody who I feel like I'm still connected to. He was on Heroes. He was on Alias, all that stuff. And he was somebody that I had connected to that way. MC Hammer was another person who early on was on Twitter. And I reached out to him and got him on and stuff like that.
Yeah, Twitter is where I was first. Twitter, I have more followers than anywhere else. And it actually, for me, really worked out. I had this one time I was doing comedy at the Improv up in San Jose. And it was that weekend of the year where everybody was playing, football, hockey, basketball, baseball, all was going on at the same time. And it was all local, near San Jose. And so ticket sales were really slow. And they said, hey, we want to give away 100 tickets, and it's 400 seat house. And I had a door deal. So I said, well, give me a couple of weeks before you do that. So I started tweeting and, put the little retweet. And so the fans, the Chuck fans, started retweeting. And we sold the show out. And so I was like, I'm so glad I didn't just let them give away the 100 tickets.
Right. Or you could have been hey, instead of giving away 100 tickets, let me see what I can do. And then
That's what I did. And it
Even like if it was a deal or whatever, I'm sure that
even if it was like a 2-for-1 or something, I'm just give away.
It's still better than free, giving out free tickets, 100 free tickets.
Exactly.
Now you were talking about the pandemic, you were talking about 2020. Did you I stopped doing comedy during that time, but I was also trying to shoot that movie during that time, so I was busy with that. But did you have any situations where you did Zoom stand-up?
I did a couple of Zoom stand-ups and I hated it.
Right.
I hated it. People are not, when they're in their homes, they are not focused on comedy. Everything is happening. In fact, I got a call from a friend of mine saying, hey, he had recommended me to this guy from Microsoft. And so Microsoft guy had emailed me, said he wanted me to do a show, wanted me to do 45 minutes. And so I said, hey, look, 45 minutes is too long. I said, people are not focused when they're at home. I said, they got the kids going on, animals are running through, they're not focused. And he said, well, we're going to send them charcuterie boards and bottles of wine, so it'll be a good time, blah, blah. I said, I'm willing to do like a 15-minute set or 20-minute set and do like a 10 or 15-minute conversation afterwards. Mm-hmm. He says, okay, let's do that. And so we did that, and that was fine. But sure enough, 3 minutes into my jokes, this one family's dog is like right in the camera. And that was funnier than the act.
Right.
But the two shows that I did before that were just painful. It was just I just rushed through it to be done with it. And then I only did one. There's a Jason Earls. I don't know if you know Jason. He's a comic. The way he set up his show was he knows your act enough that he can just throw you softball. So you're just having a conversation and he'll throw you a lob and you do one of your jokes for the lob. And it was fun.
Okay.
But everything else was just painful.
Oh yeah, totally. And people asked me to do Zoom stand-up and I was like, no, thank you. I will not be partaking in that. I will retire before I will do something like that. So, and I did. I was just like, I'm just not going to be funny for a while because there's no reason to.
I did this one thing that was, they called it drive-up comedy. So,
okay.
It was in a park.
Okay.
And they have a stage and it's lit and they have this big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And they tune their radios in the cars to a frequency that the show goes through their radio.
Okay.
So I'm backstage, I'm watching the show go on, and all these comics are, you can't hear the people laughing because they're in their cars.
Right, right.
So they're like, you know, pausing and trying to hear the laughter, and then sometimes people are blowing their horns when it's funny. So I'm watching and I go, okay, what I'm going to do is when I go up, I'm just going to just go through it as if there's no laughter there, as if I'm doing a practice set and just keep the jokes coming.
Okay.
And so that's what I did. I just went up and just went through it. Pop, 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 pop. So I'm hearing the horns blowing and all that. And a friend of mine, her boss came to the show and he said, yeah, Mark was the funniest one. He said, everybody else seemed a little nervous. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't nervous. I was just going to get through it and get my check and get out of there.
All right. Let's go. Let's go. Also, what are you drinking today? I'm having some Diet Tea Mango is what I'm having right here from HEB.
I'm having Kirkland brand H2O.
There you go. Okay. Sir, I have to reach out. I have to shout out to one of my sponsors right now.
Mm-hmm.
So let me do that real quick right here. That way, if you want to wet your whistle, you can do that. The Brass Tap offers over 150 craft beers from around the globe in an upscale neighborhood bar atmosphere. They carry almost every craft beer from almost all of the Texas breweries, from Rollertown Beer Works to Tupps to Peticola's Brewing. You can always count on them to deliver the craft beers you're looking for. They also carry craft beers from other states and even craft beers brewed by monks from overseas. They host weekly events with pint nights, music bingo every Wednesday at 7 p.m., family feud and theme trivia every Thursday at 7 p.m., and a new local live music artist every Saturday night. They also have one of the longest running happy hours in all of the DFW area with the selected $5 drafts, discounted shots, $6 wine, $7 special drinks of the week, along with food specials under $10. You will also enjoy every major sport game on one of their many TVs or large screens, covered patios, which are dog friendly, and also special events, which are always listed on their Facebook page, such as car shows, bike nights, and events that benefit local charity groups. With three local locations in Allen, Prosper, and their brand new location in Frisco. And the Frisco location is the only one that features Old World Pizza made to order, and guests are raving about it. Do not forget, any guest who mentions this sucky broadcast can choose one free appetizer of their choice. Seriously, just mention this podcast. Say, hey, I'm in the area and I was listening to this sucky broadcast, and give me a free appetizer and then pick one what you want. And it's on the house. Visit the Brass Tap in any of the three North DFW locations. Once again, Allen, Prosper, and their brand new location in Frisco. See, when you come visit, we can go get appetizers.
There you go.
Right. So that's I'm very excited about that. That's one of, I got some great sponsors, and my sponsors are always like, here's some good food, here's some good discounts, and I appreciate them. So I like to keep, even though I'm doing the show and I'm all over the place, I like to keep my sponsors in the DFW area.
Yeah.
That's me. Yeah.
Good.
So back to Chuck. I have another Chuck question for you. Are you
sure?
Do you see any of the Chuck people ever? Do you ever like just run into them or you hang out with them or see them?
Not really. I've run into maybe Krinsky, I think more than anybody, because he's a comic too.
Wait, now Krinsky is okay. I have a Krinsky story. I have a Krinsky story. One of the only times I got called in to do, but my agent called me in to do an audition. They were like, these people are specifically looking for a specific type of comedian, and they saw you and they want you to be a part of this. And I went in and I was like, well, I don't know what's going on here. I've never actually been called, like requested as like for an audition or whatever. And I went in and Scott was there. And I was like,
oh, really?
And for me, I was like, cool. These people think I'm as good as him. And that was my takeaway from the, I didn't get the part. The other day I looked it up because it was a Disney Channel show and it was like some Disney Channel show about radio DJs or whatever like that.
Yeah.
And I looked it up to whoever got it. I don't know who the guy was. And I was just like, whatever, that's fine. He got it. But yeah, that's.
So I've had an audition where the breakdown, you know, they describe the character.
Yeah.
You know, lovable, gentle giant. Think Mark Christopher Lawrence.
Oh, really?
I go in for the job and did not get it.
But the breakdown actually lists you as an example. That's,
it said, think Mark Christopher Lawrence. Did not get the job.
That's who was the woman that was, did you ever see the show Archer? Have you ever seen the show, the cartoon Archer? And the mother was, she just passed away last year, 2 years ago. Who was the mother? The mother, the woman that was the mother, that was the voice of the mother. She said that when they were auditioning for the character to play the mother's voice, they kept saying, could you sound like her? Could you sound like her? And then finally her manager was like, why don't you just ask her to do the role? If you want somebody that sounds like her to begin with, why don't you just have her do it? So that's
right.
The weird part is that you did, when you went in and said, did you say, hey, I see you're looking for a Mark Christopher Lawrence type, and here I am right here.
Well, I would just assume that, you know, when I walked in and they say, Mark Christopher Lawrence, you're next.
Yeah.
They knew that I was the guy. Right. And so I said to my manager when I didn't get it, I said, I don't know what happened with that. He says, you know, they probably thought they couldn't afford you.
Oh,
I said, well, to which I would say, have the conversation.
right. I'll hear you out. Give me a second. I'll hear you out. So speaking of not being able to afford you, no, I'm just kidding. That's not what I'm speaking of. So I have a couple movie type, like TV show movie types, and I want to know if you could play. I'm going to give you an example of a character. And I want to know who you think you could play. If you could be any Batman villain, who would you be?
Wow, that's a tough one. And so then my question would be: is it TV Batman or film Batman?
That's a good question, because the TV Batman is more. Like if it was like an Adam West style show or something like that, it'd be a little bit more softer than if it was like the Robert Pattinson one. But you know what? For this question, I'm going to go with the Robert Pattinson direction, because the comical one would be too easy for you.
Okay.
Robert Pattinson. I don't know how familiar you are with the comics or whatever, but I'm saying they decide they're going to take. They're going to pull an obscure villain or somebody out of the woodwork who hasn't been done before.
No, a new villain.
Yeah, a new villain. Or somebody that hasn't been in, like, the Robert Pattinson universe, like, stuff like that.
Who? I would want it to be very dark. You know, it would have to be a very dark character for me. Because if I'm going to go villain, I'm going to go way villain. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I would create him in the hood. So he would be a product of society. Sort of like Hancock, sort of like,
okay, gotcha.
sort of like that character, not without the alcohol,
right?
But definitely angry at society.
Okay,
so it would be that kind of character. Because I tell people all the time, I'm really nice. I'm always nice to people, and I'm nice to a fault sometimes. But I grew up in Compton, and it's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You keep poking the bear. It's in there. So it would be that kind of character, that sort of a Hancock-esque kind of character. But if it was like the TV side, it would be King Tut.
You just blew my mind, because I literally was going to just say King Tut. If it was the comedy side, I was going to be like, I see you as King Tut.
I loved that guy when I was growing up. I think it was because he was always eating.
it was very much like, I don't know who's the actor that played him in the Adam West series, but
yeah,
he was this very, and it was always this thing where it always ended with him getting hit on the head again, and he'd be like going, what happened? I'm just a regular professor or whatever. And somehow he'd like get hit on the head and then turn back into King Tut. And it was just like this really dumb, like Ted, just character in general is just very weird, bizarre, but that's funny. So, okay, here's another one. If any current franchise, any current series franchise, what would you like to be involved in if you could?
John Wick.
Okay. Would you be somebody who was working with John Wick, or would you be one of the villains or whatever, one of the people he has to take out?
I'd like to work with him, but I think because I like firearms, I shoot, and so I'd like to work with him and have to shoot with him.
Okay. Like all of a sudden he's like, I need help. Right. Lock and load.
Where's Mark?
you're like his Uber driver, and you're driving somewhere, and he's like, take this. You're gonna have to help me get through this. Bang, 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 bang. That's great.
Or he says, you know how to use a firearm. And we stop the car, and I open my trunk, and it's like state of the art.
Yeah, that's great. That's hilarious. If you could be. So Disney's remaking all their live action, like they're making all their movies back into live action movies. They've hit a couple of them right now. By the way, I didn't like Little Mermaid. I'm just going to mention that real quick, because it's topical right now. I just wasn't a big fan of Little Mermaid. And the reason I wasn't a big fan of Little Mermaid is because they rearranged the order of songs. It wasn't anything else, but the movie starts, and I'm waiting to hear, like, I'll tell you a tale of the marvelous sea, and the Titans, the Phantoms Below song, and they don't play that. And then I'm like, okay, well, then go underwater and start the musical number with all the sisters, right?
Right.
No, we are the daughters of Triton. Don't do that song. And I'm like, what is going on right now? What are they doing? And then halfway through it, they sing the Phantoms Below song in a completely different place for the movie, and there's a statue, but they don't explain where the statue came from, and there's just a bunch of stuff that happened in the movie, and I'm just like, none of this stuff makes sense, and I walked out. I should have watched the whole thing, but I was in a mood. I was like, no, this is all too much for me. So
yeah, I was listening to NPR, and they were reviewing it, and they had a couple of guests on, and neither of them liked it. And I think the thing that bugged them most was the animation. They didn't like the animation.
And it was very weird, because they tried to make Sebastian look like cartoony, but then Flounder still looked like this weird fish. And Scuttle looked like a weird... They changed Scuttle to a bird that's able to breathe underwater.
Yeah.
For the so that and the director said, "Oh, I did that so there was more underwater stuff instead of them coming up to land all the time."
Yeah.
Like that was their logic. All right, but anyways. So, my question was, if you could be a character, a live action version of any character in a Disney remake that hasn't been remade yet, who would it be?
A Disney remake that hasn't been remade.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't know what hasn't been remade.
Let me tell you ones that I know are coming out. So
I did That Darn Cat.
That Darn Cat? You mean the one with the... Was it the remake of That Darn Cat, right?
I did the remake. I did the one, yeah, with Dougie Doug.
Okay. Because where the cat has a collar and it's an alien and it talks with the... Is that the one? Is that...
No.
That darn, oh, what's That no. Darn Cat?
That Darn Cat was like... I guess it was 60s. And, you know, this darn cat just kept getting into this mischief. And then there's like all this stuff going on in this town that you didn't even realize was going on. And so in 95, I believe it was, they did a remake of that with Dougie Doug as this sort of bumbling FBI agent.
Okay.
And it didn't really work. It was like, you know, one, Doug wasn't very interesting in the role. And the only, John Ratzenberger and I were opposing gas station owners. And we went to see a screening because neither of us were available when the premiere happened.
Yeah.
And we went to see the screening there were some producers there and they had a few kids there. The only time those kids laughed is when we were on screen.
There you go. That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like going in my head. What was I thinking about the movie? There was a movie and there was a cat and he was from outer space and Kurt Russell was in the original. And I don't remember that. Maybe it's called The Cat from Outer... It's probably called The Cat from Outer Space or something like that.
Something right on the nose.
It was some cat and he had a collar on and he was an alien. And when he had the collar on, he could talk. And then when they took the collar off, then he just was like a normal cat.
Yeah.
And so he kept... And then the thing was he'd keep losing his collar. Uh-oh. And then... Or like this vet would take off the collar and then all of a sudden he'd be a normal cat. And then what's
going to happen?
No, but anyways, so I think like Moana's coming out. I think they're doing.
But I need to choose some from something that hasn't been redone.
No, right? These are shows that they're still casting. So I'm giving you some that they're still casting right now. So Moana, Frog Princess, Lilo and Stitch.
Was that Disney?
Yeah, that was Disney. They're doing a live action Lilo and Stitch. That's what.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about that. Except the guy that's the voice of the big CIA agent in that.